What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Sean Springs played in the game the last time this organization played in a divisional round game, January of 2006 at Seattle, after they beat Tampa in the wild card round. Another chance tomorrow night for this franchise to advance to an NFC title game. Sean joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. What do you remember? There's one thing I remember specifically about that Seattle game. What do you remember about it?
If Carlo picks off that ball and runs it down the sideline, that game is over. Come on, Carlos Rogers. You know, it was a good game, man. I thought we jumped up on him, and then the Seahawks, you know, obviously playing out there. It was a pretty tough environment, but we handled them pretty much. And then if we pick that ball off, Carlo picks it off and run down the sideline, the game is over because our defense was stout that day. And they just made a few plays, and we fumbled. But it was good.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. I mean, LeVar had already knocked out Sean Alexander. He was the league MVP. And you've got Carlos Rogers. And did you tell me this or did I read this somewhere? That when he left Washington, he ended up getting LASIK. And he ended up catching everything after he left Washington because he had better vision. Is that true?
Yeah. That's a true story. I think it was a league story. I think it came out like in Pro Football Weekly or something that he was dropping balls in Washington because when his cover percentage and everything, he batted down a lot of balls and dropped a lot of picks. But he goes out to San Fran in free agency, he gets an eye exam, and realizes that he needs LASIK surgery because what is it called when the ball gets up on you fast and he loses at the last minute?
Right.
Was that nearsighted?
Yeah, and that would be farsighted, I think.
Farsighted.
Yeah, when you can't see close, yeah.
It come up on it, because, you know, sometimes ball can get up on you fast, and he just loses it at the last minute. He gets his eyes corrected, and I think he has 8 or 9 picks that year, becomes first-team All-Pro.
Yeah. Second-team All-Pro he made in 2011, second his first team. Year in San Francisco.
Yeah. Second-team All-Pro.
All right. I mean, that was too bad because, although, remember, offensively, we were struggling. I mean, it's still a record, the 41 passing yards by Brunell in the win over Tampa is the fewest passing yards, Sean, I think, in a playoff win in modern era football. And people were hurt. I think Taylor Jacobs was in at wide receiver. But you're right, man, that 2005 team, I think that was one of the – I mean, because there have been a lot of bad defenses around here for a long time. That team was a really good defensive team. So was the 2007 team. That was decent.
Yeah. Yeah. We had some – you know, under Greg Williams, that 2004 and 5 team, you know, I think we were number 3 and 04. And I mean, we were pretty stout, man. You know, obviously our pass defense was, you know, with some talented guys back there. Because I think, you know, Vinny went out and got all first rounders from LeBron and Sean and Carlos and myself. So pass defense was pretty good. Man, I just remember those are the good old days. Now we got a new team, man. I love it.
So let's talk about that. First of all, I haven't talked to you since early in the season. We had you on early in the season. And at that point, Jaden had already started to show that he was pretty damn good. But you've sat there now and you've watched this dude for 18 games. Is what we're watching real in your mind? Is he legitimately an elite quarterback?
Yeah, we have, you know, as Washington Commander fans. We have a little PTSD from Robert's first year where he was amazing and then it went down, wasn't as expected. We thought we was going to have him in the franchise about 15 years. Jaden Daniels is a 15-year, I mean, he's good as advertised. I mean, when you think about his skill set, you know, we knew he could throw the deep ball. We knew he could throw the run. And even kind of knew, obviously, he was a second pick overall, that he made good decisions. But I had no idea that, you know, you combine all his skill set with his character and work ethic and, you know, humble just personality, that it would happen so fast. In the NFL, normally it takes about a year or two to see what you really got. This kid is amazing. This kid is amazing. And it's all it's a combination of all those things that make him great, you know, and his poise. And just, you know, I can't speak highly enough of him. And, you know, each week on Players Cup, me, London, and Santana, we get guys in, and all they talk about is, you know, how great of a leader he is. And that's, oftentimes that's rare, because a guy who's, you know, a high draft pick and he's also a quarterback, kind of given that, and people just say, oh, he's the leader, he's the quarterback, and it's kind of handed to him.
Yeah.
But if you see the way DQ and those guys handled him, he earned it, man. Like, those guys love him. Those guys are, I mean, this team believes that they can win the game at any moment. They believe that the game is never over. Obviously, we had the Hail Noah and a couple of late wins. But everyone believes it. You know, everyone believes it. And just an awesome deal.
I mean, you got a chance, you know, at the end of your career to play in New England with Belichick and with Brady. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that old saying, when you have that guy, everybody on the team, every player, every coach, everybody that works for the franchise thinks when that guy's on the bus headed to the stadium, you got a chance to win, or you're going to win. Does that permeate, you know, the locker room when you, I mean, you played with Brady. Did you feel that way? I mean, is that a legitimate thing?
Hey, it's just like when you're sick and your mom gives you that chicken noodle soup, everything going to be all right, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing with a quarterback, man. He's a stabilizing factor within the organization, man. And he, you know, Brady was, you know, he was the hardest working dude on the team. So that set the tone. He just, his personality was like, leave your ego at the door. Obviously, that was set by Bill and that organization, but that was just Brady himself. So when you have that, everybody else, how can you be a jerk if the best player and the captain and the leader of your team is a good guy? What happens is everybody else realizes, like, you need to ship up or be shaped. Shape up or be shipped out. Like, we're building something special here. You see that when you have great leadership at quarterback, obviously Brady and other great quarterbacks. Peyton Manning is one that comes to mind during my era. You just see it. And then when you don't have that type of leadership inside the locker room or that guy as a head, you could also see how toxic and negative and dysfunctional organization can be when they don't have that CEO quarterback as the head of their franchise.
Yeah. As a defensive player, you know, heading into a game against a quarterback like Jaden Daniels or Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen, you know, quarterbacks that are true, not just dual threat, but can also sling it. What game plan are you hoping to get as a corner, as a defensive player?
The game plan I hate is when you have to play man coverage for two reasons. One, you know, when I was in the league, we had a guy, Michael Vick, and, you know, you turn your back and you're chasing the receiver down the sideline and he's running you off. Back and Michael is running right. He's running right beside you. You're like, oh, crap, I got to go get him. So, you know, oftentimes when you're in man, and so that's one. And the second thing is when, you know, a guy can extend the play and, you know, off the rhythm throws and he's scrambling back there. It's like duck, duck, goose back there. You know, it's hard to cover receivers more than 3-4 seconds. I mean, covering a receiver for 2 seconds is almost impossible. When a guy can extend a play 4 or 5 seconds, like, you know, it's terrifying, honestly, as a defense. So the defense that I often hope we play is we have vision on the ball. We play zone. We everybody had eyes on a guy like that, or if the receiver scrambled, we could pick him up once the play broke down and then attach ourselves to the receivers and, you know, hope that our spire, whoever's watching the quarterback, can go make a play. I prefer to be in a zone situation, throw different looks, confuse them. Don't just line up a man, don't just line up a zone, but obviously, you know, their legs, they can pose a serious threat, so you got to confuse them.
Yeah, I mean, everything you're saying makes total sense. So I would ask you, Detroit plays as much man coverage as anybody does in the league. They got absolutely torched by Josh Allen, the last kind of, you know, extend the play quarterback, dual threat opportunity quarterback they faced. Is it tough to change when you've been a man team most of the year to play differently in a playoff game?
I would say it's hard to go from zone to man. It's not hard to go from man to zone. Aaron Glenn, shout out to Coach Glenn. Aaron's longtime NFL vet.
Yep.
OG corner in the league. I mean, he lives and dies by man coverage. But with that being said, I mean, after seeing Josh Allen, Dan Campbell and those guys, they're pretty aggressive. I'm not sure if they are going to change, but I would, with a guy like Jaden and understanding what happened when they played the Bills, they would have to change. Or here's what they would do. They will play man, and one of the linebackers or safety, the guy who's in the hole, is a spy player.
Right.
They just play the same coverage, but they're going to designate somebody to Jade. One of the most interesting matchups one-on-ones, like oftentimes in the league, I matched up. But you know, when we played Atlanta, that was the first time I actually matched up on a quarterback. My job was to stand in the middle field, like on second and long and third down, and chase Mike Vick down if he got
really
out. I didn't even check. I didn't even know who their receivers were at the time. My job.
How did you do?
In Seattle. Come on, man. You know what I did. I did what I do. I always do what I do. I made some plays.
Yeah, but Vic is Vic. Time. So you made some plays, but did he get the best of you every once in a while?
No.
Okay.
He did it. He fixed my guy. But, you know, now, I can't say I wasn't scared to death the whole time. but it was a good game. We had a good game plan.
You know, I thought it was interesting, and we talked about it earlier in the week. The 3rd and 6 that they had on the final drive Sunday night in Tampa, where he hit Deami Brown, and there were legitimately 2 players spying him. Now, maybe one of them had Eckler. You know, if Eckler comes out, you know, rather than stays in on pass protection, but I don't think I can't remember 2 spies on a quarterback. That really puts a defense at a disadvantage in coverage, doesn't it?
Well, to your point, I think that's great analogy for the fans out there. It may look like 2-1 may have Eckler if he stays in, but obviously he's keeping his eye on Eckler, but he's also very aware where Jaden is at all times, because, you know, like, it's very like, listen, he goes this way, force him back to me, right? I got Eckler. I'm gonna try to hang with you as long as I can and show the look of 2 guys, but really I might have the back. So, you know what? And another thing teams are doing, obviously you got to do it against the Eagles with Jalen and Lamar. They're loop stunt. They do stunts up front where, you know, the tackles might go wide and then the ends will come back in, so you always have somebody in the face. The rush is just not a generic rush. You got to do some stunts up front to kind of affect his run lanes and pass lanes. So more so than you probably would a guy who just stands in the pocket. So you'll probably see a lot of that. On top of having spies.
By the way, real quickly, Brian Finneran, Sean Jefferson, and then the tight end Algie Crumpler were Vic's receivers in a game in which the Seattle Seahawks, with Sean Springs on the field, held Vic to just 40 yards on 13 carries. That's a good job. Yeah, I bet that was the game.
The exact game.
Yeah. Exactly. You guys won the game. Yeah. It was 2002.
Down in
yeah.
Yeah. Down
great yeah, exactly.
Was I'm glad you fact checked me because when you work with guys like Smoot, you got to fact check things.
Well, you always have to fact check Smoot. He never lets the truth get in the way of a good story, that's for sure. We are talking to one of the all time great corners, and that is Sean Springs. What's the first thing when you sit down to watch a football game as a former player and a very high IQ corner that you look for? Like, when you sit down Saturday night, Washington's on defense, what are you going to be looking for?
Very first thing is third down. Well, very first thing going into that game, so I already have some, you know, as a player, I already have some thoughts in my mind. One, Detroit scores points. They're going to score points. Two, we score points, right? So what I'm going to be looking for is, for us, can we sustain drives? Right, because you know, if we can sustain drives and get their offense off the field, because they got some weapons now. They got some serious weapons. They got some guys who can run. And, I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs is probably as talented as Saquon Barkley.
Yeah,
I mean, that's how talented that kid is. And Dave Montgomery is coming back, and they got guys, you know, St. Brown. Those guys can play. The receivers can play. So for me, it's like, okay, first I'm gonna look at if Washington has the ball first. Like, can we sustain a drive against Detroit? Can we torch them? Can we score? Second is like, okay, when Detroit has the ball and they're moving the ball up and down the field, which they have on everybody, and I suspect they probably will on us, but can we hold them to field goals in the red zone? So I'm going to watch third down and I'm watching red zone when our defense is on the field and then when our offense is on the field. Can we run the ball on first and second down to get us in third and short? And because Aaron, you know, because they're going to suspect that James is going to run. It's totally different when you know, you have to play a little different when it's third and two versus third and eight. Right.
Yeah, so, of course.
That's what I'd be looking at.
What did you see last week with Marshawn Lattimore?
I saw early in the game that a guy was coming off a hamstring wasn't necessarily ready for the matchup with Mike Evans. I thought Mike Evans did it. Yeah, I mean, him and Baker were on fire early. What I did see is Coach Joe Witt make the adjustments needed in the second half and not get caught up in a one-on-one matchup that everybody was hyping. Oh, Marshawn and Mike played. Yeah, well, he's also coming off a hamstring, so that wasn't fair to that kid. And they were reducing the splits where, you know, it was hard to press because they were putting them in bunt situation and Mike had a free release and a lot of the receivers had a free release. Hopefully this week he's better. His hamstring is feeling better. He is better. They got a kid from Ohio State at Detroit who's probably one of the fastest receivers in the league. So we're going to see.
Would you have him cover Amon-Ra St. Brown or Jameson Williams? Would you have him, you know, following somebody around like he did in the first half against Evans, or would you just play him on one side? How would you play him?
I think Mike Sinistrell is a monster. Huge fan of that kid. So I would just keep him on the side and play a solid defense. I think, in other words, let me say it in a different way. I think that the young rookie corner that we have is good enough right now where he's held his own against most receivers that he's faced this year. So I am confident that he can do the job and Marshawn can stay on this side. I feel really good about our corner matchup.
So I just said, and we're talking to Sean Springs, I against Tampa, because Baker was prone to putting a few balls up for grabs during the course of the year, I wanted them in attack mode. I didn't expect them to stop or slow down Tampa Bay, but I wanted a couple of takeaways in the game, and I wanted him to feel the pressure. With Detroit, I kind of feel like, and I'm just curious, you know, you talked about the offense is going to be the best defense. I think we all understand that. If they can possess the football, if they can score on most of their possessions, they're going to have a chance if they don't make mistakes. But I feel like bend don't break, keep everything in front of you, make them, you know, put them into 10, 11, 12 play drives and hope they make a mistake is a better bet against this team than being aggressive. What do you think?
Well, it's two different things. You said get them in long, third and long.
No, no, no. I want to keep everything in front of me. I want them to do whatever they want to do between the 20s and then hope, you know, instead of a five-play drive 70 yards with Gibbs, you know, ripping off a 40-yard run or Williams scoring on a 40-yard touchdown, I want them to earn it in the red zone. And 10, 11 plays, you get a chance maybe that they make a mistake. There's a penalty or something, and they kick field goals.
I'm in total agreement. Like, you know, be smart, keep the ball, show different looks. Now, here's what I would say about Jared Goff. He has some games where he will throw you some. Let's not act like he is just lighting it up. Like, I mean, he has some games where he's unbelievable and he's great. But he also has some games where he's Christmas and he hand out a few gifts. So I think we show different looks. I think that, you know, obviously they're a very explosive offense and you can stop them and we can play a little bit of a man. I think Joe Witt against Ben Johnson is going to be one of those games where if you're a spectator and you really want to study football, y'all should record it because this is going to be like, you know, high-level scheme coaching this week. It's going to be big time.
So give me the Witt part of this.
Joe Witt, much like he did against Kyler Murray, you know, when he played a scrambling quarterback, he's going to show different looks. He's going to figure out ways to pressure them without exposing the corners, isolated one on one all the time. He's going to understand and not get frustrated like a lot of oftentimes some coordinators get when they give up big plays. He's not going to just jump from scheme to scheme. He's going to stick with his game plan. So when you see Coach Witt, and he's going to have those guys like ready. Those guys and Coach Quinn and Coach Witt, they're going to have those guys ready on defense. Because they know. I mean, it ain't no secret. Come on, man. Like, you know, like, Jahmyr Gibbs. Like, the kid is a monster. I'm not saying this lightly. Like, hey, guys, I don't know if y'all know. This kid is just as talented as anybody in the league.
He's legit.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's like Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah. I mean, he's an elite back, and he's so fast. I mean,
he's an elite back.
If he gets to the edge in this game, because Bucky Irving, when they started going outside in the second half, there was no edge setting. They've had that issue a lot of the year. They had that issue. Bijan Robinson, I also think, is an elite back, and he had his way.
You know,
Sean, their best defense all year long has been their offense. It's got to be that tomorrow night, right? I mean, you're not stopping Detroit from scoring 30 if they get the ball enough.
It's the same drive. That was the first thing I said. You asked me what I'm looking for. Can we stay on the field?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, and I think we can.
All right.
You know?
Have you, you know, you've played in a number of playoff games. Is there any kind of thought that this one's like icing on the cake, like all the pressure is off? Not that they had a lot of pressure on them at Tampa Bay, but is there kind of an advantage for Washington where no one's expecting this? Do you guys feel that as players when you go into games in which you're a big underdog, that it's just like, okay, there's no pressure, we can go play?
Well, it's two different things, right? So when you say no one is expecting us to go into Detroit, maybe not at the national level or wherever. I haven't seen the Vegas odds. But
Detroit's a 10-point favorite.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm about to correct it. Detroit's a 10-point favorite. The feeling that I got being at the facility on Wednesday and talking among my peers and people I know around the league, it wouldn't be shocked if we went in there and beat the Detroit Lions with a banged up defensive starters, make a couple plays here, and Jaden doing what he's doing. So, although it's a 10-point favorite, it wouldn't be shocking if they won.
And I agree. I agree with that. But what I'm asking you is, from a player perspective, do you ever have that feeling because You just had a big win. No one was expecting this team to win 12 games and get to the postseason and win a playoff game. And that, like, you know, a lot of people say everything from now on is icing on the cake. You know, if they don't, I'm not that way. I think they should take advantage of this opportunity. They've got the best quarterback in the conference right now. They could get to a Super Bowl over the next 2 weeks. But I'm wondering from a player's perspective, do you ever feel like that weight or that pressure is off because you've already accomplished so much more than most people thought you would have?
Well, I think that happens in the regular season. I think there's still a little pressure in the playoff, to your point. It's less as seeming like because you're an underdog, but it's still pressure because, you know, you start every week, you start to be like, we're getting closer, right? It's that feeling of, like, if we win this game, you know, we're playing an NFC Championship game. So there's pressure in a sense that from a player's perspective, like, yeah, you're right. You know what? Nobody expects this one. We're going to go out there and get it done, and we're going to play angry, and we're going to play violent. But in a sense, among each other, there's a little bit of pressure of, like, we're close, man. And then there's some veterans like Bobby probably in the locker room saying, it doesn't come around too often. Don't take this for granted. And he's putting the pressure on the team to, and when I say pressure, meaning like this week, get your tickets and everything out of the way. Make sure you're studying extra film. Make sure you're on it because it's pressure because we can do it. And that's where, in a sense of like not outside pressure, of the people, because you're right. They think the team's good and they're great, but Detroit is the best team in the league, and they're probably between them and the Eagles and Kansas City. They're going to win the Super Bowl, right? Okay, great. But so from that standpoint of view, there's less pressure. But the when I say that the team is internally are thinking about, like, no, we can go do this when we get closer. So there's a little bit of nerves there, I guess is the better way to say it, Kevin.
Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. I hope you're well,
right,
and would love to do it again before another game.
How are you going to disrespect me like that, man? Get on a show and not even talk about the obvious we should be talking
all
about.
Right. Well, go ahead. Tell me. Actually, before we get to Monday night, I want to ask you one thing. Do you remember your first playoff game and who was on the other side of the field as the quarterback?
My first playoff game in the league?
Yeah.
No, who was it?
You faced
Mark
Dan
Pinnell?
Marino.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They beat us. I remember that. I did. I gave up a skinny post to, Tony Martin. He was in Miami that year. Jeez.
That was Marino's last playoff season. I think it was the last year of his career.
Okay.
You got to face, as a rookie, one of the greatest ever. You weren't a rookie that year.
Yeah, I was a rookie. I was second.
Oh, you were a rookie that year? Man, you're much older than I thought. You played against Marino.
And Elway.
And Elway.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Buckeyes fighting Irish Monday night. I'll tell you what, man. Texas had first and goal at the one. How didn't they get it in?
Hey, that's the past, man. How are you not going to mention the fact that we're playing in the championship? I love that. Thank you for asking about it. I think my Buckeyes going to go out.
Are you more excited about that than? Of course you are. That's the biggest game of the weekend for you. Clearly, will you be there?
No, I was at the Texas game. Me and Shawnee and I took the family down to Dallas for the Texas game, man. So
that was a hell of a game.
You know, a hell of a game, man. Hell of a game. I got to see my dad's best friend Tony Dorsett. Shout out to TD. Everybody was in there. We played in Texas, but the Buckeyes, we were in there deep, man. Haven't heard from my boy Doc Walker and those guys. Shout out to those guys. You know, all that want to reach out to me because my Buckeyes are doing our thing. Yeah, man, like, it's going to be a good game. Marcus Freeman played at Ohio State. Legendary.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Commanders fans, thank you guys for bearing, you know.
Here's the most important question for you as a Buckeye alum. Would you trade Monday night for a win over Michigan?
No, I think that's overrated. Okay. I only care about the national title. Nobody's going to even – only thing they're going to remember about the Michigan loss is that was the game that probably caused us to just go just demolish everybody in the path to the national title.
Yeah, I should have had you on Monday. I don't know why I didn't think of just having you on Monday to recap the game and then preview the game. But I'll just ask you one more because I'm way behind here. Is Jeremiah Smith the best or most talented receiver to ever play at Ohio State? Yes or no?
He's the most talented receiver ever play in college.
Whoa!
I've never seen anything
wow.
like that. He's the third best receiver in the NFL.
If he's in there next year,
he's
not.
There's probably two receivers in the NFL I would only take over him right now.
Jefferson and Chase?
Probably maybe Chase and Tyreek Hill.
All right.
Baby, you're not understanding. This kid is I've seen a lot of things in my life. I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, he is
Never.
Really something else. And what is he, 18, 19?
He's 17. He just turned 18.
Yeah.
He just turned 18.
All right, I got to run. I'm glad we got that in. The best receiver in the history of college football, he'd be the third best receiver in the NFL right now, Jeremiah Smith. We'll have time to talk about that game. Good luck to your Buckeyes Monday night. Thanks for doing this.
Bye-bye.
Sean Springs, everybody. We'll do some quick Denton news next. The Caps had a big win. Ovechkin came up huge. And then we'll get back to the game tomorrow night. We'll get to Denton's news top of the hour. Patrick Everson, we've had Patrick on the show before, jumps on with us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, @PatrickE_Vegas on X on Twitter. Patrick's a senior reporter for the Vegas Insider. He's a contributor at Fox Sports. And I really appreciate you making time. I know this is a busy time for you. I want to talk about all four games, but let's start with our game, Washington and Detroit. It's the biggest point spread. It's the biggest total. You know, talk about where you think the numbers might go, both, the point spread and the total. And where are sort of the public bettors right now? Where are the sharps?
Well, first off, thanks a lot for having me on this morning, Kevin. I appreciate it. Hope Paul is well in the D.C. metro area. Look, this was I've talked with a couple of different odds makers over the course of this week on it. Opened 8.5. I believe it's still sitting at 9.5 right now. I haven't looked at the latest numbers, but Tom Gable, he runs the sports book up at Borgata in Atlantic City. So he's in a really unique spot because he's an hour from Philly. So they're just going to get slammed with Philly money.
Right.
Sorry, I got my dog in the background being a little huffy.
It's okay.
But he said he doesn't think it he's not sure if it gets to 10, Kevin, but he said if it does, there's no way it's going to last long. There will be immediate buy-in on the Commanders at that number. So I think when you're asking about potential sharp play, if that hits 10, that's going to happen. The fans of the Commanders, the public betting masses in the D.C. area, they're going to bet the Commanders, whether it's 8.5 or 9.5 or 10 or 8 or 7.5, which I don't think it's going to go backwards, but that far backwards, I should say. But if you're looking for sharp play, if that hits 10, like Tom Gable said, it is not going to last long at all. It's going to get snapped up.
Yeah, it's hit 10 a couple of times this week. In fact, I'm looking at a couple of 10s right now. But you know this, I'm curious. With these standalone games, whether it's Monday nights or Thursday nights or playoff games, the public tends to like favorites and overs. But it seems to me this week that there's a lot of NFL fans, take Washington and Detroit fans out of it, that actually give Washington a legitimate shot and are probably taking the points this week and maybe underdog bettors. What do you think?
Oh, I think you look, based off what we've seen, the body of work, it's been really interesting to see what the Commanders have done this season. So I think they're a dangerous team for sure. It's a big number. I think the Commanders can definitely cover that spread. Winning the game, that's a much bigger question, and that's obviously what everybody really wants during the playoffs. But I'm looking at DraftKings, for example, And the money at draft, just, and this is just on straight bets against the spread, the money is not ridiculously lopsided, but it's solidly on Detroit. But the ticket count is 50-50, Kevin.
Yeah.
You know, same on both sides. So there are, and that's DraftKings national numbers. That's not reflecting any, you know, regional bias or anything. That's the whole pot thrown in there because, you know, pretty much all of DraftKings betting, with the exception of, I think they've got a brick and mortar space in the Meadowlands or up in New Jersey. But most of it's mobile betting. So it's just the whole pot, and you've got a 50-50 split as of Friday morning, coming up on Friday afternoon your time, for on the ticket count. So I think that's pretty interesting. I'm sure that there's a lot of excitement in the D.C. area that's creating a lot of that. But again, that's a national number. So there's certainly people who think Washington can keep this close, and I think they can too.
The total in the game is at 55, 55 and a half, I'm seeing out there. I see some 56s right now. I mean, is this one of those games, Patrick, where it's hard for them to get anybody on the under? They can't make a number high enough to get people off the over?
In this case, and I'm kind of surprised because I thought, when I first saw it, I thought, wow, it's a big number. But I also thought, you know, that offense for Washington is potent. We've seen Detroit's offense all season long put up a ton of points. And again, from Tom Gable just yesterday at Borgata, he said, look, with this game indoors and two very good offenses with average defenses, he said they've seen a lot of over money there so far. And Borgata, just a little background, that's a BetMGM book. It's run by BetMGM. But, you know, then I flip over, take a peek at what DraftKings is seeing. And they got a few more, you know, a little bit more in the way of tickets on the over, and a little bit more, or rather on the under, which surprises me, and a little bit more in the way of money on the over, and then also looking, I've got some BetMGM numbers here too, and you guys have got obviously BetMGM National Harbor right there near DC, and it's, you know, pretty split on money, and a little bit more tickets on the under, actually, which surprises me a little bit, but what I think comes into play here, and this is something that a couple of different odds makers have told me, is that even if somehow bettors think this game might be under, maybe the over is a little high. I don't necessarily think it is. I think we're going to be entertained on Saturday night, and I certainly hope so. Sports books now, with the way that sports betting has evolved here in the United States, they're going to need the under no matter what. Because in singles, off, as you pointed out, parlay, they're going to take favorite and over generally. They're certainly going to play the over. That's where they want to have their fun. They want to see things happen. But with single-game parlays now, Kevin, they need unders because in these single-game parlays, they need games. They don't want receivers going over their yards and getting anytime touchdowns or getting first touchdowns or, you know, over-passing yards, over-rushing yards. They need unders on all this. So even if they don't need the under for the game, they're going to want the under for the game.
Well, I mean, you know, you've known this for years, and anybody that's followed it, and I have over the years, for the average fan, it's painful to root for the under. You know, it's really hard to hope to root for the clock to run and for there to be, you know, no points, but, you know, also no drop passes, so the clock keeps rolling. That's a painful play, always has been. But, yeah, by the way, I'm just curious if you know the answer to this because I just looked it up. I was curious as to whether or not Washington-Detroit at 56, how much higher it needed to go to be kind of, you know, in on the list of some of the highest, one of the highest totals in a playoff game. Do you know what the highest total is ever in a playoff game?
That's a good question. I wish I had that at
I actually,
right.
I just looked it up. I didn't know if you knew it or not.
Okay, well, do you want me to take a guess?
Yeah.
This has got to be really close. I'll say, just for grins, I'll say 57 and a half.
Oh, it's 60 and a half. It was 60 and a half.
Unbelievable. Wow.
Packers and Falcons in the 2016 season. It was 60 and a half. That's the highest total ever in a playoff game. The highest total ever in a regular season game. And it actually sailed over the total was that Kansas City Chiefs Rams Monday night game back in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
Total was 63 and a half, and the final score was 54 to 51.
That one, I remember that, Kevin, because really in-game betting was just starting to kind of get its feet under it, and that was hilarious to watch, the in-game betting number. It was, I believe it was like at 112 at one point.
That's crazy.
It was phenomenal.
Let's talk about the other games. Is it my imagination here, or are the other games kind of split as well in terms of tickets?
Well, I'm looking just this morning. This is just fresh today from BetMGM. And again, you guys have got some great books in your area with National Harbor and Caesars and so forth. But at BetMGM, this is kind of interesting. You're right on this. Texans Chiefs on the spread, ticket count, just the number of bets made on the spread, not parlays, just straight bets, 50-50. Commanders Lions, 50-50. Rams at Eagles, 57 Eagles, 43 Rams. Now, again, this is just tickets. The money is a little bit different. Yeah. Ravens at Bills, 56% tickets Ravens, 65% money Ravens. So it's very close. There's two-way action all four of these games in ticket count. The money varies a little bit. The Eagles are the taking the most money by percentage, followed very closely by the Ravens, by the way, going on the road. They're definitely attractive, and that number jumped the fence from being Ravens short underdog to Ravens short favorite now. But at BetMGM with Commanders Lions, just to keep it local, again, that's a 50-50 ticket count. And this is interesting. I just saw this. 62% of money at BetMGM is actually on the Commanders, which
that doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
Does it? That's it. I find that's definitely interesting. That's
I felt like it was a game in which money and tickets were going to lean on a big underdog. I think it's just the way they've been scoring, and it's the Jaden Daniels effect here, don't you think, Patrick?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I think there was a stretch there for several weeks when things were really going smoothly for the Commanders, where they were becoming, they weren't quite Detroit Lions-esque with the public, but they were getting there. They were definitely getting there, taking tickets and money every week. They had a little bit of a kind of a speed bump two-thirds of the way or so through the season, and people kind of backed off them a little bit. But, then you had the Eagles game and the Falcons game and now a playoff game that have fallen in their favor, and everybody's gotten to see them. A lot of these have been standalone games in a lot of cases, or high-profile games where people have gotten to see them. So I do think there's something to be said for that, for sure.
I'm just going to take a guess here. I mean, we've already talked about how, the unders are always a need, but I'm going to guess the biggest under need for books this weekend is going to be KC and Houston. That number's low, and I would imagine there's a lot of overaction.
Well, I guess it depends on where you look, but in looking at what BetMGM sent over just today, you're looking at pretty good two-way action on that.
Okay.
And I did have also a little bit more tickets on the over, a little bit more money on the under. I do, but again, like you said, 40. I know, I guess it's going to be super cold there, by the way. But the number's low, and I think that's going to invite at least the late bettors in on the over, and the public bettors on the over, and the public bettors are going to take favorite over, as you already alluded to at the top of the segment here, Kevin. So I think they're probably going to need the under on that one, and it could end up being the under that they need most. I did hear from Joey Fiesel. He's the head of football trading at Caesars, and he said there was sharp play on the under in that game, which took it from 42.5 to 41.5, but it's been stuck there ever since. So it's not like it's gone any further, and I'm sure the over is going to be popular there by the time we get to kickoff tomorrow.
All right, two more for Patrick Everson, Vegas Insider. Real quickly, on Monday night, Notre Dame and Ohio State, how's that shaking out? Notre Dame's always, as you know, a big public team, but so is Ohio State. So just give me a sense of where, the pros are and where the public is on this game.
So some circus sports here in Vegas actually opened this 10.5, Kevin,
yeah,
and it just
I know.
Blew right off. And even the 9.5 went away, so there was probably a little bit of sharp early play on Notre Dame, and the public is certainly likes Notre Dame as well, likes both these teams, to your point. So here's what I'm hearing from two different sports books, both of them available in the D.C. area, Caesars and BetMGM. They both are at a consensus at this point. A lot can change between now and Monday. But what they think they're going to need is an Ohio State win and a Notre Dame cover. And a lot of people like to call that the Super Bowl middle, where they're betting the favorite again on the spread and they're betting the underdog on the money line at the more attractive price, especially the public.
What is it, plus 300, plus 310, something like that?
Exactly. And what Seamus McGee at BetMGM said, he said there is plenty of interest on the Notre Dame money line, making the Irish a small loser when coupled with the futures book. Keep in mind, that's part of this dynamic, too, how the odds makers have to manage this. If they've got liability running to these two teams in the futures, they've got to kind of manage their position a little bit more. So they would rather see an Ohio State outright win for sure. They don't want Ohio State to cover that number. And Caesars' Joey Fiesel said the same thing. He said, I think what we're going to need come Monday night is the Buckeyes to win and the Fighting Irish to cover the number.
What do you think the biggest future liability is? Is it Ohio State winning it all or Notre Dame winning it all?
Oh, I think the liability is Notre Dame winning it all.
Yeah,
no
exactly. Yeah, because of the number
got. Exactly. Yeah. A lot of people got this after that Northern Illinois game. I've written about it. There are people out there with tickets at 80-1, 60-1, 40, all the way down the ladder.
Yeah. Well, they've got an opportunity to hedge in a big way. All right, real quickly, is there, out of the four divisional round games, is there a side or a total that you really like?
Man, that's a really good question. I'm debating on a couple of things. I'm not really convinced by the Texans. I mean, at 9.5, that's a lot of points for the Commanders. So certainly that one's attractive. I just have a feeling the Rams are going to make this interesting against the Eagles. That's the one I kind of like. And I thought they were going to be good last week. So much so that, and this wasn't sharp or anything. I don't, Kevin, pretend to be sharp, but I took the Rams alternate spread against the Vikings, Rams -6.
Wow.
And got there, which was really nice. That
what
was fun.
Did you get
I just think
that?
The Rams are going to play well. It wasn't huge. It was like plus 240 or so.
Yeah.
But nice I wish job. It could have been a little better. It probably should have been a little better. But I just wanted to have some fun with it, and I just felt like the Rams with a playoff savvy quarterback, a quarterback who's won a Super Bowl. I thought they were going to be better, and they were better. So
check the weather on that game. Could be snow in Philly for that game throughout. Patrick, you're the best. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the football.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Patrick Everson, everybody, at Patrick_E_Vegas. Alex Ovechkin, big last night. We'll touch on that quickly, and then I'll get to my smell test, and Denton and I will go around the rest of the three divisional round games and give you our thoughts on those. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are also free and live on the Odyssey app.